WCRI's Festival Series highlights one of our community's greatest musical traditions, the Newport Music Festival. Since 1969, the Newport Music Festival has hosted over 2,000 concerts in Rhode Island's most prestigious venues, while presenting world-renowned and emerging classical music artists from around the globe. The Newport Music Festival has left an indelible mark on our music history here in Rhode Island, as well as around the world. Now, here's host Mike Mano, along with the festival's executive director, Pamela Pantos.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to show number 20 in WCRI's special series about the Newport Music Festival. I'm Mike Mano and have the pleasure of sitting with Pamela Pantos, the executive director. Welcome, Pamela.
How are you this evening, Mike?
I'm doing great. Spring is almost here, it seems.
Do you promise?
Well, we've had a few days of some sketchy things lately, but I predict that the future is bright and sunny.
Full of daffodils, as we say, right?
Okay, well, that's good. So what does spring have to bring to the Newport Music Festival?
Well, I think spring is all about rebirth. And when I think of beauty, a very soft beauty, you know, with all those pastel colors and the flowers. So along these lines, I thought we'd discuss tonight the Newport Music Festival's Thursday, July 17th concert this summer, which is an evening about Frédéric Chopin. And it will be performed at the Breakers at 8 p.m. on Thursday, July 17th, featuring Daniel Delpino and Ilya Kazantsev, pianists. So the whole program is really about the Opus 10 Etudes, and then after intermission, we play the Opus 28 Preludes, and the two pianists join forces at the end of the evening and play the Opus 73 Rondo, which is a lot of fun. So I think it's going to be a lovely evening, and anybody who loves Chopin will certainly find the evening to be right up their alley.
And beautiful surroundings with the Breakers.
Oh my gosh, incredible. Absolutely incredible. We are so lucky that we are, you know, the Preservation Society allows us to perform there. So Chopin has played an extremely important role in the festival's repertoire over the last 49 seasons. And from my extensive review of the 49 years of program books, I think it's been played as much as almost Beethoven and Mozart, quite frankly. I'd say of the three, those are probably the top three composers in terms of, you know, the amount of music that's been played. So a little bit about Chopin, and then we'll get right into his etudes. Chopin was born west of Warsaw in 1810. His family was very musical, and his parents both played instruments, and it was very apparent quite early that he was a child prodigy, as so many of the composers that we've been discussing so far this year. By the age of seven, he had begun giving public concerts, and at the age of seven, he had composed two polonaises. So
I was thinking about doing the same thing.
I was watching Sesame Street. So Chopin was of slight build, even as a child, and was always prone to illness, and that actually played a huge part of his development psychologically and emotionally. So at the age of 13, Chopin attended the Warsaw Lyceum, where he received organ lessons and composition lessons, and he continued to compose and give recitals. He was so talented that he was called to perform for Tsar Alexander I, who happened to be visiting Warsaw, and the Tsar presented him with a diamond ring because he was so pleased with the performance. Mm. I mean, so at the age of 13, he continued his studies, and his final conservatory report read, Chopin, third-year student, exceptional talent, musical genius. Even as a student, he had a lot of family friends who were quite well off, and he ended up attending operas directed by Spontini and Felix Mendelssohn and other celebrities. So even in his youth, he was exposed to lots of other great composers. And again, as we'll see, that had a tremendous influence on his compositions. So he heard Niccolò Paganini play the violin and decided to compose a set of variations, Souvenir de Paganini. And it was probably right around this time when he decided to start writing etudes and exploring the capacities of his own instrument, which was the piano. Interestingly enough, every single composition that Chopin ever wrote has a piano in it.
Hmm.
So he continued to be successful, and as a performer, it opened the door to Western Europe for him, and in 1830, he left Poland, just at the age of 20, never to return. He ended up emigrating to France and became a French citizen in 1835. So at the end of 1831, he was performing in Paris and playing his own music, And Robert Schumann, the great Schumann, heard him and declared, "Hats off, gentlemen, a genius." So again, you know, it's amazing to think here's Mendelssohn and Schumann, as in we'll see very soon, Liszt and all these other great composers who were influencing Chopin and allowed him to gain such incredible knowledge that he really created then his own milieu, his own way of writing. A prominent critic of the time said, "Here is a young man who, taking no model, has found, if not a complete renewal of piano music, an abundance of original ideas of a kind to be found nowhere else." He realized at the time that he really didn't love performing for huge audiences and that he really preferred salon music. So he started associating with people who had salons and, you know, who would then pay for music. And he earned the respect of his peers of Liszt and Berlioz. He no longer needed to depend upon his family. He was teaching piano lessons to affluent students all over Europe. You know, people would send their children to study with him. So this really changed his life. He was no longer the student and worried about money. So he really started to expand. He made the acquaintance of Franz Liszt, and the two became friends in Paris, and for many years lived literally a couple of blocks away from each other. They performed together on seven occasions between 1833 and 1841. Imagine Liszt and Chopin at the piano together. They had a great respect and admiration for each other, but it was a little bit of love-hate, maybe a little competition going on between the two of them.
Always.
So some believe that Chopin displayed a tinge of jealousy and spite towards Liszt's virtuosity on the piano, and others think that maybe he admired that Liszt was so theatrical and had such, you know, showmanship. Anyway, Liszt was Chopin dedicated his Opus 10 Etudes to Liszt, and Liszt's performance of them prompted Chopin to write, "I should like to rob him of the way he plays my studies." So let's talk a little about these etudes. When all of us studied piano, we played Czerny and Han, and two composers who wrote numerous etudes, meaning studies, you know, from the French verb étudier. But Chopin's pieces are not studies. They're really musical compositions. So again, he created his own oeuvre, his own kind of new work. He was the first to pioneer this art form. And all 27 of his etudes, Opus 10 and 25, were created to train and refine a performer's technique, but it still has its own musical story. They're real compositions. There's an emotional aspect, and it really takes a virtuoso to pull off the combination of difficult, you know, the difficult technique required and the emotional output. So after Chopin, a lot of the Romantic composers started doing etudes along these lines. So what was really interesting about this is that every single one of these etudes is designed to develop a legato style of playing. And for our listeners, that's playing as smoothly and connected between the notes as possible. And Chopin's severest criticism of his pupils was that they do not know how to connect two notes. So we're going to listen to five etudes from the Opus 10 that will be played this summer. And these early etudes, Opus 10, were written when Chopin was between the ages of 19 and 23. So you hear that youthfulness and that reckless abandon. He, as we said, he dedicated them to his friend Franz Liszt. And they are going to be played this summer by our wonderful artist, Daniel Del Pino, who's been playing at the festival for several years now. So we actually will get to hear Daniel. He made a recording of these Opus 10, and we'll actually get to hear him, which is really exciting. So these last five etudes are number 8 through 12. And each one of them does something very specific. So the etude Opus 10 number 8 starts off with this little trill, and it sounds like a bird. It's been dubbed the sunshine etude because it's supposed to bring spring. So I hope this will be something will bring spring to us all. Number 9 in F minor is one of the most lyrical of all the etudes. It's a little dark, like some of the nocturnes, but it's really, really beautiful. And you hear sort of this hero striving to achieve something. Number 10 of Opus 10 is in A flat major. And the piece may seem similar in structure, but the rhythm and the phrasing vary greatly throughout the piece. And you can see that the pianist themselves has to master using the same structure in many different ways to make it really interesting to the listener. Number 11, the E-flat major, the arpeggio, is because you'll hear lots of rolled chords and arpeggios. Number 12, the C minor, the last in this particular group, was dubbed the Revolutionary Etude. It's one of the ones that's the most recognized, and the piece was reportedly created after Chopin heard of Poland's failure in its rebellion against Russia. Chopin was unable to participate due to his poor health, and when he heard the rebellion failed, he cried, "All of this has caused me so much pain. Who could have foreseen it?" So these nicknames, arpeggio, revolutionary, were not given by Chopin. As a matter of fact, he disliked them greatly, and he always referred to them with the opus number and the number. So we will hear opus 10, numbers 8 through 12, played by Daniel Del Pino.
We will listen to those five pieces and then be back with more. Thank you. the amazing talent. It's just incredible. Not only the composition, but the pianist.
Yeah, Daniel is
saying he's been around at the festival for several years now, right?
He's a festival favorite, obviously, because he's not only such a great artist and technician, but he's also a wonderful person. And I'm so thrilled that he's coming back to play the Chopin we just heard.
All right, let's pick it up and get to some more.
Okay, so although the Opus 25 Etudes are not on the Chopin Evening, I would be remiss in not playing a few of them for a couple of reasons. First of all, because the Chopin Etudes are really important to understand as one great set, but also because there's an amazing recording of them by Charlie Albright, who will be appearing at the festival this summer as a special guest artist.
What a coincidence.
How that worked out.
How you just happened to pick him.
And we spoke about Charlie in our last broadcast, actually two broadcasts ago, and we discussed the program he's going to be performing at the festival on Saturday, July 21st at 8 p.m. at the Breakers. So this was a great opportunity. So these etudes were composed about 12 years later, from 1836 to 1839. Instead of being dedicated to Franz Liszt, these happen to be dedicated to Franz Liszt's mistress, Marie Daguet, and the reasons for which are a matter of speculation.
Oh.
So we'll just discuss these etudes. We'll get right into them. So again, we're going to listen to these last five, starting with number 8 in D-flat major that has been nicknamed sixths. And it's because you hear parallel sixths in both hands. The next one, number 9 in G-flat major, is nicknamed Butterfly. It's the shortest of the 24, and it lasts under a minute when played quite quickly. You can really picture the way a butterfly flies with the wings flapping up and down, and you'll just hear that in the music. Number 10, nicknamed Octaves, really has a middle voice. You know, you don't just hear voices up in the upper octave, but really in the middle. And that's what makes the piece so difficult, because you need to play the octaves you'll hear around that middle note while it's being held. Horowitz once said that the piece is nearly impossible to play as written, and he should know. So number 11 in A minor, Winter Wind. You might think that the piece is quite simple when you listen to the beginning of it. The reason for this is that the first four measures were not originally part of the piece. They were suggested by a friend of Chopin's to add. So he added these first four measures as a kind of an introduction, and then went into the piece as he had intended it to be. And it really takes a true virtuoso to play this piece, and you'll hear why. The last one in the set in C minor is nicknamed Ocean. And the last of these 24 etudes brings the set full circle. So again, incredible difficulties when you hear this, and it's one of the more difficult ones again. So we will hear these five etudes, Opus 25 by Chopin, numbers 8 through 12, played by Charlie Albright.
Once again, we'll listen to those five pieces, then take a short break, and we'll be back with more. Welcome back to WCRI's special presentation of the Newport Music Festival Summer Series. And besides the Summer Series, there have been some earlier concerts. We have one more to go. And tell us about that, Pamela.
Yes, it's the fourth and the last of the Chamber Music Series. And two festival favorites, Göran Markusson, flautist, and Tim Carey, pianist, will be here on just this coming week, Saturday, April 14th, at the Channing Unitarian Church at 7 p.m. And they'll be playing a beautiful program, just absolutely remarkable. And it's $40, and it includes concert and the reception, so people can come ahead of time and have something lovely to eat, and then hear the concert, and at intermission, have another glass of wine. So it's really, a festive occasion, and we're really looking forward to it.
Sounds like a deal. I've been to lots of places in Newport where it's more than $40 just for the wine. All right, let's get back to the program.
So going back to this Thursday, July 17th concert, the second half of the program is primarily comprised of Chopin's Preludes, Opus 28. They're recognized as some of the composer's most characteristic works. So until 1838, when Chopin was 28, his career was developing extraordinarily well. He had become one of Paris's favorite composers and performers. He had lots of students who wanted to, pay large amounts of money for his piano lessons. He entered high society, and the world seemed to be his oyster. He met George Sand. They became lovers, and he decided to go to Mallorca with her. And the trip was supposed to be quite romantic, and it turned out to be quite the roller coaster. First of all, Mallorca was where Chopin found out he had tuberculosis. And when one of the local doctors found out, Chopin, George Sand, and her children were unable to even rent accommodations anywhere in Palma de Mallorca. So they were forced to go way out of town and be desolate by themselves in the mountains. In addition to that, Chopin's piano got stuck in customs, and he had to rent a local piano, and he called it a wretched replacement. In addition, the weather was quite windy and gusty, and all of these circumstances made the overwhelmingly sensitive composer go through extreme emotional up and downs, which we really hear in the Prelude. So one day he was ecstatic, and the next day he was devastated. So why are there 24 preludes? In European music, there are 24 musical keys, 12 major and 12 minor. And Chopin himself was pretty obsessed with Johann Sebastian Bach's Wohl temperiertes Klavier, the well-tempered clavier, where there are 24 fugues. So he almost was mimicking that structure when he wrote these. A fascinating point is that in addition to these 24 preludes, he wrote a couple of others. One of them, called the 27th Prelude in the key of E-flat minor, is included in incomplete form. It was never finished. However, at the Newport Music Festival in 2002, Alain Jacquon, pianist, actually played this piece. It was the first, we think, public performance of this piece. This one is in E-flat minor, as we said. And it was fascinating that it's, here it is, a piece that was never performed before, and the Newport Music Festival sort of brought it to the world. So many people did not enjoy this Opus 28. They thought that it didn't have any formal structure, and a lot of the pieces, as you'll hear, were, very incomplete. And Schumann himself said they're only sketches. They're not really complete compositions. Liszt, however, his friend, was quite positive and felt that they were great pieces of music. So the scholar Jeffrey Kresge has argued that Chopin's Opus 28 is much more than the sum of its parts. And this is what he said about it, which I think is quite important. Individually, they seem like pieces in their own right, but each work works best along with the others and in the intended order. The Chopin Preludes seem to be at once 24 small pieces and one large one, as we note or sense at the start of each piece the various connections to and changes from the previous one. We feel free to involve ourselves as listeners, as players, as commentators, only with the new pleasure at hand. So now we're going to listen to a performance of Chopin's Preludes, Opus 28, here played by the incredible Jean-Philippe Collard, who for many years played at the Newport Music Festival. We will play the first five of the Chopin Preludes. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Pamela. I'm Mike Maino, and we'll see you next time on WCRI's special presentation of the Newport Music Festival.
thank you for listening to WCRI's Festival Series featuring the Newport Music Festival. For more information on the festival, special seasonal concerts, to purchase tickets, or to donate, call 849-0700 or visit newportmusic.org.